Welcome, everyone, to the May 20th episode of the TMS Wikis Tuesday night discussion group. Today, we are going to be discussing chapters 6, The Law of Attraction, Affirmations, and Timeline Therapy, written by Eric Watson. And we are also going to be discussing Journaling for The Whale That Got Away, by Walt Alexi, from the book that Eric and Walt wrote together, God Does Not Want You to Be on Pain, Proven Techniques and Faith Can Heal You. And we are very lucky tonight to have both authors with us. We've been having a great conversation tonight, talking with a couple of our callers, starting at about 8:30, and just kind of connecting and sharing our stories. But we're going to dive in now. The format is going to be the same as we've had in the past. We're going to have Bruce, our excellent summarizer, is going to give us a summary. We'll keep that quick, but Bruce and Herbie seem to have an excellent, excellent rapport going. And Walt has already mentioned what a great job Bruce has done summarizing the chapters, so I'll probably hand it back over to Bruce pretty soon afterwards because, well, it seems to work. With that, let us begin. Take it away, Bruce.
Okay, well, as usual, because of Walt's time zone and the lateness of the hour, perhaps we should begin with Walt's journey, Chapter 6, Journaling, Journaling 4. These are excerpts from his journals. The Whale That Got Away, Leviathan, as Hobbes would call it.
Much bigger than a fish.
Yep. Yeah, Moby Dick. And I've looked over your book, your edition, on Amazon, and you can see that in my summary. But Walter says that every writer, himself included, dreams of the big one, the giant bestseller that will make him rich and famous. But he says everyone has something like that lurking in the depths of the mind, a big promotion, getting taken in a financial deal, or the betrayal of a friendship. And in this case, the book that got away, although I see it all over Amazon, is Lincoln's Unknown Private Life, an oral history of his housekeeper, Mariah Vance, 1850 to 1860. I know Walter can probably summarize it, but it's a extract of Lincoln's black housekeeper from 1850 to 1860, and we don't know very much about that era in Lincoln's life. And, of course, Walter was treading on some academic toes. They describe him as a journalist who was called in. That's a very pejorative term in academic circles, I might add, when they call you a mere journalist. And you Englished Mariah Vance's, Mariah Vance's, eubonic idiolect that was written down by a teenage girl around the turn of the century in 1904. But you think that even although the critics took you to task and raked you over the coals, this was well worthwhile. Because forgiving these people has gone a long way toward relieving your back pain. And this is another example of the power of forgiveness of others and compassion for yourself that so often helps relieve TMS pain. And so I guess in the journal, this was a way of expiating whatever kind of anger you had for people like in the Journal of the Abraham Lincoln Association who criticize your work. And the only thing I thought was that the problem was, Mariah Vance has been assimilated by this lady, and put into a framework, that no one can verify. And it sounds like what needed to be done was to take all of Mariah Vance's anecdotes about Lincoln, one of which was that he was baptized before his he took on the presidency, I think in a Southern Baptist ceremony, and then there are some unpleasant revelations about Mary Todd Lincoln, like she was addicted to laudanum. But how many people in the 19th century weren't addicted to laudanum? They seemed to put that into any kind of medicine at that time. You see, I don't have access to the original handwritten manuscript. That would be the point to start separating Vance's wheat from Sutton's chaff, because it sounds like Sutton made a mess of what might have been some very interesting things. But just a lot of your revelations, Ted, weren't assimilated very well by the Abraham Lincoln people in academia who guard Lincoln, Lincoln's memory and so on. But this period, 1850 to 1860, is very dark. There's very little known about that. And these few revelations don't really sully Lincoln's memory, do they? So you think that Walter, that writing this out in a journal form was one of the things that helped relieve your back pain, letting this
yes, definitely. Definitely, because I was full of anger and you know, the way the academic crowd treated it. See, a publisher, well, I was conducting a writer's workshop.
Yeah.
And met a man who said he had the memoirs of the black washwoman to the Lincolns.
Mm-hmm.
In their home in Springfield, Illinois, from 1850 to 1860. And I met with him, and he showed me the whole thing, and it was all handwritten by a young woman who took notes from the original woman who was working for the Lincolns, Mariah Vance. Anyway, long story short, I believed it, and I wrote it as a book, well, believe it or not, you know, a book. If you want to believe it, fine. If you don't want to believe it, fine. But there's an Abraham Lincoln Association in Springfield that protects the world from knowing that Lincoln was a human being, not a statue. And this book went against that. It humanized him. And they not only protect what they want you to know about Lincoln, but they discredit anybody's books about Lincoln and Mary Lincoln who aren't part of their crowd. And their fields, medicine, engineering, run up against the same thing. A group of very powerful people who the media worships these people as authorities.
And that makes a lot of sense. If I can jump in.
Sure.
The sense that I get is, because we want to keep it so that everyone can relate to it, and I think Bruce has done a good job of doing that, it sounds like in your life this was the big fish that got away.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's... And it still affects you. Like you said in your chapter, that it's still hard to journal about.
Oh, sure. Well, it brings it all back to mind. Sometimes
I love that book, Walt.
Yeah, I sent you a copy of it. And see,
yes,
we print in there the handwritten manuscript so you can compare it with... I just took out the blank dialogue and explained a few things, but it was you know, kept pure to what Moravance told the white woman. So the main thing is a lot of people like me are victims of one prejudice or another by powerful people who have the power to discredit what you're doing. See, we included every possible provenance that Mariah Vance existed, that she worked for the Lincolns, and what she knew. Even Robert Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln's son, verified everything she said. But they still wouldn't believe it. Now, the publisher offered $1 million. That was the whale. They offered $1 million for the book, and then they made a condition that they would have five Lincoln authorities read it for did they believe it or not. One of them said, absolutely, I believe it. It's marvelous. It's the best thing written on Lincoln in 100 years. The other one said, I don't believe parts of it, but most of it I believe. Three others said, if you publish this, we're going to sue you. They were the ones who wanted, they protect their own turf, They want people to buy their books and nobody else's books on Lincoln. Or don't say anything against Mary Lincoln either. So what Herbie said before and what Bruce and Forrest said is true. A lot of other people have had experiences similar to this.
It actually reminded me, one of the callers before we started the recording was talking about... her mother being with her and then moving away and how that was a loss and how that made her sad. And I know that feels very, very different. The theme of this chapter is the whale that got away. But at the same time...
It was a definite loss.
It was a definite loss, exactly. You know, we all face these losses, and then how do you deal with them? Which is why I loved Bruce's question. Because personally, I feel like sometimes if you journal about something, you dig up old bad feelings, and by reviewing them, is it possible to actually make them worse? Now, I don't think that's necessarily the case, but it's something that I think one should be aware of. How deep do
you
go?
I would like to comment on that.
Please.
You can forgive, mm-hmm. but you may not be able to forget.
Right, yeah.
And so I forgave, but I haven't forgotten. What happened still happened.
It sounds like you got something to say here, yeah?
Who?
I thought it was interesting the way you framed this episode in terms of what Deepak Chopra said about things that happen to us and the people who enter into our lives at just the right time. Whatever relationship you've attracted in your life at this moment are precisely this is Deepak speaking, are precisely the ones you need in your life at that moment. There is a hidden meaning behind all events, and this hidden meaning is serving your own evolution. And so you think...
Well, I do, and I, you know, bring in the religious thing. I think the Lord moves us around with people in our lives at the right time. Why did you meet the person you love and you might have married or did marry? He moves us around like checkers in a checkerboard, which is okay. That's what he does. And so all of these people entered my life totally unexpectedly. And it ran its course. It had good and it had bad.
Okay, you said this is no excuse to stop dreaming. It may take the Lord a while, and your dream may not come true in exactly the time frame or way you hoped it would, but
yeah.
You think you should keep dreaming anyway. Well,
I'm glad for the whole experience.
Really?
The whole experience, good or bad, because I didn't get the recognition or money that I should have out of this, but I myself feel I've contributed a book of amazing inside knowledge of Lincoln and his wife and children and his family.
Well, the only time this may bear fruit, Walt, is 100 years from now.
Well, some researcher is going to look the whole thing up and say that the academic crowd, the Lincoln crowd, treated this book unfairly, and it was wonderful that it was published, and I'm glad that I had it. I persevered to get it published.
That's
so my own
frame,
feeling
bro.
Is it was still the greatest literary thing that I've done, except for the God does not want you to be in pain. That, to me, is more important, that book.
The one that we're discussing right now?
One that we're discussing.
Yeah. Yeah. That book is, to me, my most important book.
It's a powerful book. Yeah.
Herbie,
I think you were about to say something.
When he said, when he was mentioning about the checkers and all that, you know, I was thinking, you know, when we was writing a book and he journaled about what happened with his Abraham Lincoln book and all of that, and I read it and I saw that, I thought, wow, this is amazing. You know, I'm friends with this guy, you know, that really wrote this book that's going to go down in history someday. I know it is. I know it in my heart, you know. But at the same time, he moved, you know. Walt, how old was you at the time? Maybe 10, 15 years ago when you did that?
Well, let's see. I was 65, almost 70.
Okay. Well, see, it's moved. See, now we're all here. You know, it's me, you, Bruce, you know, Becca, all of us, Paula, Mouse Mom's on here. We're all here when we're talking about it. And it's, you know, and now it's written in another book, you know, God Does Not Want You in Pain, which serves even another purpose, you know? And it's just powerful the way everything's turning out. You know, the well that got away might have swam right over into this book. You see what I'm saying? I'm because of all the people it's going to help. And, wow, it's just amazing to me of what I see in my mind that's going to happen with the book that you wrote about Abraham Lincoln, because I read it, and it's beautiful. And but also, at the same time, you know, it swam its way right over in our book that we wrote, you know, and it's telling other people how this pain hurts you and how this pain brought on TMS pain in your life.
Well, even the Lincoln crowd they tried and they succeeded, you know, at one point to not get it published. They threatened the publisher if they published the book. But I forgot what I was going to say on this. See, they accused me of plagiarizing it. We include the entire handwritten manuscript to show that it was not a word was changed or plagiarized. But the media, they published the dirt that slammed at me, thrown at me, but they wouldn't even publish my rebuttals. I wrote to the newspapers to ask them to publish my defense of the book, and they wouldn't do that. So it was just a total, you know, stressful situation. But I said, you're not going to lick me. And I spent a whole another year after the publisher turned it down for $1 million. They said, well, we won't publish the book. We think that the critics were right and you made it up. I said, how dare you? You're fired. I fired one of the top literary agents in New York who told me that you know, she didn't believe she thought I had made up some of the stuff. So I said, well, if you're not with me, you're against me, so you're fired. And she said, you're firing me? I'm one of the top literary agents in New York. And I said, you're damn right I'm firing you, and I'll find another publisher.
And eventually you did. Eventually you did.
Nobody else would touch it for 10 years, no other agent or publisher. I finally found a real good publisher. He said, I believe it. My wife read it, and she believes it, so we'll publish it. So they finally got the book published and did a beautiful job. But then the critics said, no, we don't believe it, so it didn't get the support that it needed.
What were you saying, Eric?
But it's hard to forget.
I said, see, everybody on this phone has had that whale that got away. You know, whether it's whatever it might be, whatever situation you might want to call it, you know, it was that whale that got away. And in my case, I could probably bring up, you know, two or three situations that just distraught me in my life, and I couldn't believe that this happened to me. And I'm sure everybody on the phone here has been through that same experience and felt that same pain, you know, on the inside. And you don't want to feel that pain. You don't want to accept that this has happened. But the thing is, in TMS Healing, we have to face those emotions and face those feelings and go ahead and just feel them, you know? And then when we face them, we start to heal. And that's what Walt, you know, was writing about in his chapter there. But we've all been through that. It's such a beautiful chapter, you know, that everybody has been through that well that got away, regardless of what it might be.
Yeah, and I think, by the way, hi. I think one of the takeaways for me, at least, is just it's not the whale, like the specific thing that got away, but it's that really matters and really in the long term, but it's the emotional reaction you have to what happened that matters and how you choose to deal with it that really has the longer effect. So Walt chose to eventually go down the long road of forgiveness, and that has a really powerful, unburdening effect, you know, emotionally for stress and eventually for TMS pain. I think that was pretty impressive for me. I don't know if I'd have the willpower, I guess, to really take that step to forgive. I'd love to hear more about that, actually, Walt, because I think there's a difference between letting go and forgiving. They're very similar, and they overlap, but they're not always the same thing. Their capability that Walt has to forgive and to really make that step to forgive. I would love to just hear more about it, if you would.
Yeah, that's awesome. Just Becca, ain't it?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Is Walt still there?
Hey, we've all had that. Like me, I mean, my business was worth almost $1 million. And, you know, next thing I know, it's gone, you know? I didn't have that much capital, but you know, with everything that was in it, it was like $750,000. And you know, and the next thing I know, it's all took from me. And it was just soon after that I was laid down in bed. You know, I couldn't even get out of bed for a year. So, yeah, wow.
Yeah, you had that similar experience. Well, I think you ought to switch on to Herbie's stuff now because he's got a lot in his chapter.
I believe we've all had that well, though. You know, like Paula earlier when she was talking before the show, like Forrest mentioned, you know, she was mentioning about, you know, it wasn't, we wouldn't maybe call it a well, but it was a situation similar to the pain that you felt, Walt, and I felt, you know. Whatever situation it might be, if it really hurts you and it's something that you wish would have never happened, then that's one of those moments that, you know, if you're still holding on to it, that you need to release it. Like Walt said, you might not be able to forget it, but you need to forgive. That's the special part, man. Thank you so much, Walt. That's awesome, man.
Okay. Thank you.
I love you, brother. That's awesome.
You too.
And how did you get to that forgiveness? Becca was asking about that just before we move on, because Becca did ask that question.
Well, I kind of put myself in the critics' shoes. That's where they came from. That was their style of work. and you know, to only endorse each other's books. And I thought, that's where they're coming from. You can't fight it, so just accept it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's called hobbling.
The unfairness. Life can be very unfair. It can be marvelous and wonderful, but it can also be unfair. I was only going to get 1% of 10% for all my work on the book. I made the book happen. And I told one of the guys involved in it, I said, why? Can't you give me a little better than that? And I said, it isn't fair, you know, what you're offering to give me. And he said, Walt, fairness has nothing to do with business. So that was another thing I was up against. There also is another element that I'd like to mention in this Lincoln book. The Lincoln community and most American, powerful American professors of American history still do not cover the black element. When Lincoln was assassinated, they interviewed everybody who knew about him, except they didn't interview his black barber. Now, in the old days, the 1800s, early mid-1800s, the barbershop was where all the gossip came in and was discussed. The barber could have told them a lot. We never learned what the barber knew about Lincoln. And they tried to ignore what Mariah Vance said about Lincoln, the black lady, because they didn't know it. They didn't want anybody else to come out with all that fabulous inside the Lincoln home information. So the black community should have gotten behind this book, and even they didn't. They were either... one of them has a TV series. Forgot his name. Big guy. But he's more white than black. he catered
you
to...
Mean, Gates. You mean Tavis Smiley?
No, Gates. No, not him. Gates. Professor Gates.
Henry Louis Gates.
Yeah, I wrote to him. I said, will you defend this book? Here's a copy of it. And he said, I don't know anything about Lincoln. BS. He knew all about Lincoln. He didn't want to get involved. He didn't want to stick his neck out and defend the black lady that I was writing about. So anyway, that's a whole other element. But black people with TMS can tell us lots of stories on how they were mistreated and how the whale that they had got away.
Well, powerful stuff, Walt. Thank you for sharing that.
It brings it all back to me, so I need to get a cup of hot milk to relax.
There you go.
Yeah,
you're
like
got more of it out. They're leasing it.
Okay. Thank you all. Love you guys.
Thanks, Walt.
Love you, man.
Bye-bye.
All right, Bruce. Ready to move on to Eric's chapter. Take it away.
And a fulsome one it is.
Indeed.
In this chapter 6, it's entitled The Law of Attraction Affirmations Timeline Therapy. It's part of Eric's journey, chapter 6. But it contains a lot of practical examples of TMS healing strategies. Three of them, of course, are the law of attraction, affirmations, and timeline therapy. And after I got through that, I realized there's more in here. There's visualizations, and we've got five. We've got anxiety and panic attacks, too. And the first of them is the law of attraction. And Eric says, for many people suffering with TMS, one of the most important steps toward becoming pain-free is known as the law of attraction, which is a metaphysical law that states you can attract anything that you think about consistently. Underlying the law of attraction is the belief that like attracts like. By concentrating on negative or positive thoughts, we can get either negative or positive results about things that we're asking for or desire. The assumption behind this, of course, is that people and their thoughts are both made from pure energy, and that like energy attracts like energy. For example, if you expect a bill inside an envelope, you'll get a bill. But if you think there's a check in the envelope, you're more likely that a check will be in there or
hey,
some good
right there,
good news.
Right there, Bruce. Let me explain that part. Right there, I was explaining the law of attraction to Walt, okay? And then because he didn't understand the law of attraction. And then I told him about the law of attraction. I told him to start expecting, okay? Now, I haven't received checks in the mail like that or anything, but I told him to start expecting what he wanted, you know, start believing for what he wanted instead of, you know, being upset about bills. And I didn't know that he was going to start expecting a check. And then about a week later or 2 weeks later or 3 days later or something, Walt goes out to the mailbox and he calls me and he tells me, I just, you know, got an offer for $6,000 to write a book. And that's how that part got in there.
Well, I know that the naysayers about the law of attraction say that there is no physical connection between thoughts inside of your head and the surrounding material universe. And they say hooey about the law of attraction. It's unscientific, it's wish fulfillment fantasy. I just looked into it just so I could interject some negative feedback in this.
You're going to heal, you know, it's part of the law of attraction. Go ahead and you can finish the topic.
But I know Steve talks a lot about this in his book, Steve Zonich. It's one of the cornerstones of TMS healing for him. And you describe four steps for working with the law of attraction. You say ask, believe, and achieve. Have any goal for getting healing or free of anxiety. Formulate a goal for being healed or becoming free of anxiety.
Correct.
And picture yourself being healthy and calm. Visualize your goal in the present moment. Feel it externally and internally. And feel as if you have already achieved your goal. In other words, feeling that you've achieved your goal before you actually had, you have done it, will set up situations that will cause that goal to come true or for you to reach it.
That's how I healed, yeah.
Yeah, you said in TMS healing, the law of attraction operates when we imagine ourselves being healed before achieving just that. That's sort of like that Buddhist koan that you can't do anything until you can imagine it. So... and that runs through Steve's book, too.
I hear you on the ambivalence on that, though, Bruce. I mean, I think when we start talking about kind of a metaphysical approach to the law of attraction, I think that's a hard thing. I mean, just it may be in this book, it may be in Steve's book, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's true. It might mean that it's useful, though. When I think about the law of attraction, I think if one has a positive attitude, good things are more likely to happen. If one keeps optimistic and keeps working for one's dreams, then one is more likely to achieve them. Now, in terms of my personal standpoint, I mean, how can we know what happened with that envelope and Walt? I don't know if we can. I think I would be more likely to say, that was probably just a coincidence. But I still think that it's useful to try and visualize what you want and try and make that happen. I don't know. I just kind of wanted to jump in there with
you.
Yeah,
so you're taking a utilitarian approach to it for us.
Exactly, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And it's probably better than be negative, better
Absolutely.
Than imagining bad endings.
Well, and if we talk about TMS healing, and that's what Eric was talking about here, you know, if he had gone through everything and he had said, you know, if I if he had believed that he was going to get worse, then I believe that that would have been a self-fulfilling prophecy. And that's going to be a nocebo right there. And we know how powerful nocebos can be. So I definitely, I think that it is very useful. It is, to use your word, utilitarian.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, right. Yeah,
believe me, my whole life ran by the law of attraction.
A lot of the law of attraction sounds like what Aldous Huxley talks about when he talks about the perennial philosophy, that underlying mystical philosophy that resurfaces in Western thinking from time to time. And the law of attraction is a lot like magical thinking. It's a lot like Hermetic thinking. It's a lot like Renaissance magic. And it goes all the way back to the Gnostic Christians and some of those kind of concepts of microcosm, macrocosm, inner and outer reconciled. I can hear echoes of that in this way of thinking about things.
Totally agree. And, you know, it reminds me a little bit of the last chapter that we were just talking about with Walt, where, you know, Walt, I think, has an amazing gift for that positive thinking. And I think I'm not alone in having such huge admiration for Walt. And he's about to turn 84. And he's writing the best book and, you know, the most meaningful book for him in his life. And, you know, I think it's amazing what he's been able to do. And I think he's able to, I mean, it's almost like the law of attraction there. Again, I don't really buy into it from a metaphysical perspective, but he kept that positive attitude. And I think Herbie is also amazing at keeping that positive attitude. It is just stunning and inspiring for me. But that's enough of me talking. Maybe I should let the man himself speak. Do you want to chime in anything about what we've been saying so far? By the way, to anyone who's listening, sometimes I call Eric Herbie, sometimes Herbie. It's two names for the same guy. But keep going, Eric.
Yeah. Since Walt has gotten better from the pain he was in, the TMS pain he was in, mm-hmm. he's already made a video to send to our friend Steve Ozenich. And in the video, I believe he said he's already written 5 or 6 books this year, you know, or maybe in the last 6 months, something like that. And I'm like, that's amazing, you know, and that's what he's done after he's healed up and he's understood the power of his mind to heal his body. But we know there's repressions. You look into that. We understand about the anger element and all the other elements. We've talked about all that. Now let's talk about, you know, what we get when we heal up, you know. And when I healed up, I knew that it was my thoughts that was, you know, keeping me in pain. I knew that it was my thoughts that brought me out of the pain. Like right now, I'm in Austin, Texas. I knew I was going to be here. I knew in my mind I was going to be here. I got here. And it's only up from here. I knew I was going to write the book about when I healed. When I healed, I knew I was going to write a book. I didn't know how I was going to write the book, but I knew I was going to write the book. Next thing you know, I got a book, you know? And so that's sort of how everything works. I know that being in Austin, you know, right here is where I'm going to do my workshops, my seminars and stuff. You know, everything is setting up by the way I believe it in my mind. So, yeah, the law of attraction is a powerful thing, but the reason I've got it there is because I knew when I healed, like the last chapter we talked about, I knew when I healed that night that my whole body, you know, basically healed up, and it was my mind that was keeping me in pain. And it was also my mind that brought me out of the pain, my thoughts.
Well, it sounds like this law of attraction functions, it is central to your own healing practice. You say that you've had over 200 confirmed cases of people healed from cancer to colds to diabetes. But you say that you imagine these people healed this is part of your methodology. You imagine them being healed before you do the healing work. It's like you...
Yes, and that's a higher power there. It was a higher power. It was not about something I'm talking about, my own energy levels and all that. That was where I laid hands on people. I prayed in Jesus' name, and you know, this, well, you don't, y'all don't know, but I'm telling you, this one guy that the first guy I ever prayed for, he had two or three weeks to live. He had cancer all through both lungs, and then the next day we go check on him, and he's got no more cancer. And that was, to me, that was from the higher power, my higher power that healed him. But at the same time, I remember what all these people I prayed for and all these confirmed healings, and it's all right here in Rome, Georgia. You just have to, you know, come to Rome and listen to the testimonies. But at the same time, in my mind, each time I prayed for these people, I would see them already healed, you know? And then, that's how I correlated it to TMS healing, you know? If I can do this for them, then why can't I see it myself for me, you know? And so when I did that, that's when my healing started really, the pain started lessening, and boom, I got it.
Yeah, sometimes it's easier to do things for someone else than to do them for yourself.
Yeah, and then when I learned to do it for myself, that was awesome.
And that's the hardest step of all, isn't it?
Yes, it was, yeah. For real, because for, I think it was like 10 years that I laid hands on everybody else, you know. But at the same time, I didn't have control of my own thinking patterns, you know. If something was messing up that day, then my nerves was messing up. Nobody on the outside knew it. Nobody around me knew that I was getting upset. But I knew it, but I kept it covered up well, you know. But then after I learned that it was my thoughts that was causing me pain, I felt like a hypocrite, you know. But at the same time, I had to forgive myself from all that. But I used the same method, methodology, I used the same thing to heal myself, to see myself healed, and I used that.
And again,
Eric, can I?
All right.
I was going to ask a question.
Yeah, ask.
Eric, did you visualize yourself? How did you practice visualizing yourself healed, or how did you envision this in your mind? Is what I'm saying.
Okay, it was a combination of visualizing, seeing myself already the way I wanted to be, okay? All you have to do is just close your eyes, just use your imagination, see the way you want to see yourself healed, see yourself healthy, see yourself beautiful, because most of us, when we're hurt, we see ourselves hurt. When we close our eyes, we see ourselves hurt. But if you close your eyes, lay there, meditate, see yourself fully healed, the way you want to be, and when you see that, you know, I used what's in the book here called timeline therapy, and I would just float over into that imagination, that person in my mind. And when I would open my eyes, I would feel so much better just by doing that right there.
Mm-hmm. The visualization that you described sounds very, very powerful, you know, very healing.
It sounds very much to me like the same. It's analogous to what a Renaissance magician would do, where he would work himself up into a state where he would imagine something accomplished in his mind with so much force and will and conviction that then he would have the power to affect it externally or to translate
that
into somebody else. It's like it's the mechanism of healing that you're talking about.
Well, I think it's important to distinguish between the mechanism, Bruce, and the action. So the visualization, that's one possible mechanism by which visualization can work. I know when I think about visualization, I think of much more commonplace mechanisms. Like, I started to read David Hanscom's book recently, and I find it very interesting. And he talks about how incredibly disempowering it is to have chronic pain and how much it can disrupt your life and how much fear it can bring into your life. And taking a moment, like, can people here relate to that? Anyone?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's
completely.
When that chronic pain comes in, it wrecks so many things that you wish you could take for granted. And mm-hmm. And having a moment to visualize and say, you know, I visualize myself at peace. I visualize myself at healthy. I think that could be it could really calm you down. It could help you relax. It would, to use Dr. Sarno's language, it would diminish the reservoir of rage because you're just calmer. Does that make any sense, Bruce?
Yeah. Well, TMS victimizes you.
It turns
you into a victim, and it disenfranchises you.
Yeah.
And takes that away
word.
Your value. It damages your self-esteem if it wasn't, you know, I don't know which came first, the chicken or the egg, but so this act you're talking about of empowerment before healing sounds like it's a necessary step.
Right. So that's another mechanism by which this visualization could work is that it makes you not a victim. It empowers mm-hmm. you. It gives you confidence that it's going to work. It helps you accept the diagnosis on a deeper emotional level. We already all accept it on the intellectual level. Like, we've read the books and they make sense. And we've thought about our own case and it makes sense. But still, there's this deeper old part of your brain which is afraid. And if you can give that, you know, and that part of your brain sometimes thinks in pictures. So if you can give it a positive picture to work from, then that could only be healing.
That's awful, like, man. That's it.
Like Dr. Sarno.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, like Dr. Sarno says, you can't just accept these things intellectually.
Right.
There has to be that emotional conviction.
I was just talking with Becca earlier today about that Edna St. Vincent quote, which I'm never going to remember. You know, pity me that the heart learns so slowly what the brain readily grasps. So wise.
Edna St. Vincent Millay. There
indeed,
we go.
Indeed.
I get to correct Forrest. Just like those nasty academics that went after
poor Walt.
Walt.
Yeah.
They do that.
They do. So let's, Herbie, you had mentioned timeline therapy, and I saw in Bruce's summary, he had an excellent summary of that. Do you want to tell us a little bit about timeline therapy, Bruce, and then maybe Herbie can comment?
Okay, well, you talked about visualization first, but that kind of goes into what we were talking about.
Okay,
with
sure, do that too.
More laws of attraction, but timeline therapy, according to Eric, timeline therapy is a kind of reprogramming process that releases the effect of negative experiences while helping people let go of past bad influences. This helps the patient live in the present, not in the past or future, while reducing his or her fears, managing tendencies to anger, and releasing negative emotions based on memories stored as repressed emotions. Well, from what I understand about timeline therapy from watching that video that I interleaved into my summary.
That's a good video. The guy's good.
What it's about is going back to it's going back along a timeline to when you acquired false behaviors based on childhood fears and experiences you had when you were a kid that go throughout your timeline, causing you to act inappropriately. Like my father used to get drunk and tantrum. So whenever I was under stress, I'd reach for the bottle and tantrum and go into a big rage. And I never knew where I learned this until I Well, I realize now, late in life, that this was Dad's example, and I had picked up on that.
And the timeline, I'm gonna make it real as simple as I can, as fast as I can. The timeline, you know, if you're right-handed, if somebody was to close, I don't want nobody closing their eyes, but if anybody was to close their eyes at any given time, your timeline, if you're right-handed, your path will be to your right. And if you're left-handed, then your path, if you're right-handed, your path will be to your left. Okay, because I'm left-handed, guys. But if you're left-handed, then your path will be to your right. Okay? So your dominant hand is your future. Your left dominant hand is your past. So if you close your eyes and imagine there's a line out in front of you, okay, and then you float it out on that line, then you could float back to the time like that your dad made you upset. And you could go back and you could fix that part. You could fix your dad the way you wanted him to, or you could heal little Bruce, you know, by just going and comforting him, and then y'all kind of combining, growing up together, and then floating right back up the timeline. So you do float in your mind. It's in your imagination, and you'll float back up the timeline. And now let me clarify this one more time the way I did it so that y'all could hopefully understand what I'm saying here. Okay, when I was 15, I was told I was going to die, okay? And that was a big, huge repression to me that I just couldn't get out of my head. It's something that it scared me. It stuck with me my whole life. It's something that I still, you know, still there in my mind, but it doesn't bother me anymore now. But at the time, as 40 years old, when I learned how to do the timeline therapy, what I done was I closed my eyes, and because I'm left-handed, then I floated back on the timeline in the way of my right hand. Okay, like in front of you, if you point to the left, to the right, then, you know, if you're right-handed, your future would be to your right. If you're left-handed, your future would be to your left. Okay? Your past will be just the same way. Like, if you're right-handed, then your past will be to your left, okay? But what I've done is, in my mind, I close my eyes and I imagine there's this road right in front of me. And then there's this line going right to left. And I float out to that line. And then as I float back to the past, I saw myself at 15 years old. And the way to shorten this up without even using a timeline, you just close your eyes, float back to the time that this bad thing happened. And when you get back there, you'll see yourself, you know, like okay, I'm going to use myself for example. I saw myself hurt. I saw myself scared. And I went over to myself, and I grabbed a hold of myself. I pulled myself up. I gave myself a hug. And I combined myself and joined in with this 15-year-old child and grew up as who I am now, much stronger, you know, grown-up man. And then when I floated back into my body, okay, in my imagination. And when I did that, boom, that fear that was still there from 15 years old, it left, okay? Now, I did have a picture that I fixed with IFS therapy, but I won't go into that right now.
So, Herbie, I have a clarifying question for you. So in terms of, like, what we're actually changing, we're not changing the sequence of events or what really happened. We're really changing or altering how we feel about them and how we reacted to them emotionally. Is that kind of the idea, by placing ourselves in the past? So is that kind of the gist of it?
Okay. Becca, I didn't. Could you just shorten that up just a little bit? Because I didn't hear you very well.
Sorry, can you hear me now?
I can hear you, yeah.
Great, okay. I was wondering, so in terms of, this sounds incredibly powerful, and having spoken with you, I know, and done some different exercises with you, I know how powerful it can be. And so I want to clarify, like, is this, what we're actually changing isn't the sequence of events. It's not, you know, I skinned my knee. I'm going to go back and make it so that I didn't skin my knee. We're more changing how we feel about about it and how we've reacted to it, and so that we can then, in the present, have a different sort of emotional attachment to the past event.
Yes, to get rid of the emotional attachment. Yes, yep. I would tell everybody on this phone, if you've never, you know, tried this timeline therapy that was invented by Tad James and the other guy that was the NLP guy, try it. You will be amazed at what it can do for you. I actually got it laid out under visualization in the book, how to do it. And I do want you to build yourself up in your most encourageable state. You know, be courageous when you do it. I had another lady named Chicken Bone that I just laid it out in a written statement on how to do it. And she has success with just a written statement. Or I say statement, with a written post. But, you know, get in there and read the 2 or 3 pages it takes to do it. Go back and fix these. Go back and fix these problems. And I remember the last show I was talking about how I fixed thousands, or at least 1,000 things. Well, with the timeline was how I did most of them.
I have a question,
or at least 100 or 200 of them.
You think that timeline therapy could be a powerful aid in TMS healing? That's something you state in your chapter.
Yes.
How exactly? Do you think that by going back and freeing yourself from these inappropriate images that you picked up in your past,
yes,
that's going to release some of that repressed emotionality to eliminate it at the source, cut it off at the root?
Yes.
Yeah.
It will release it. I would love to, you know, have maybe 20 minutes one night and just do it with you. And then you'll see, you know, how to release something like maybe a fear somebody might have had when they were 5 or 6 years old and it's still with them, you know, or a bad accident that might have happened and it's still in your mind, or it could go into anything. It really anything that's negative that happened to you in your life, you can. Because really everything that's going on is in the now. We all know that everything that's going on in our lives is right now. But all of these triggers and past hurts and stuff that we remember in our mind is still with us, though, in the now, you know? And if you go back to the past on the timeline, then you'll get rid of it.
So you think this would apply to situations like James Alexander experienced, where he was trapped in that car in that accident?
Yes.
And he couldn't get out, and then that created that pain he had in his groin the rest of his life.
Yes.
So you think with timeline therapy you could go back to that moment when you were trapped in the automobile, in the cab of the automobile, and couldn't get out, and then you could eliminate the negative emotional associations?
Yes, what James could have done, he goes back on his timeline, he'll go back and he'll see himself trapped there. So that's when I say make sure you're in a built up, incorrigible state. But when you go back on the timeline, he would go back and see himself trapped, and he would actually go over and help himself out of the vehicle that he was trapped in. And when
I remember, Eric, that when I fell and broke my heel and broke my nose and fractured my skull and crawled a quarter mile and drove myself to therapy to ER at Stanford in 1990, it took me a year to revisit the scene of the accident. And when I went there, I was afraid. It was a big step to make myself go there and find out it wasn't going to hurt me. I realized how powerful something like that can be embedded in your unconscious mind.
That's powerful that you, when you face your fears, you know, the old saying, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And basically that's when you go and face your fears and you get stronger by facing the fears. But a lot of us, you know, some of the things, it's just so fearful that they'll never go back to it. But if they get on the timeline and go back to it that way, because you're not there, but in your imagination. You know, because your imagination is what's holding these thoughts, these triggers, this pain anyway. It's when you think about it.
The bad memories are still there in the unconscious, even when you face them consciously, like I did. There's still a heck of a lot of stuff, buried material.
Yes, and if something's still there, that didn't leave after you faced it, you can get on your timeline, float back to that time and fix it. Yes.
Which goes back
to...
do
it like in 10 minutes.
Which connects with the other technique that you outline here, visualization. Visualization is a technique involving imagining yourself out of a stressful or traumatic situation into a new state of calm, peace, and healing. The objective is to use an internal visualization to change your physiology and in turn change your internal state. You give directions here for first build your confidence, then get
into
a calm, relaxed state.
That's the timeline therapy right there.
And think of a great memory. It seems like visualization and timeline therapy, these two sections, really reinforce each other. They're really part of the same therapeutic technique.
Yes. That's the timeline therapy right there. It's got visualization in it, but if you go ahead and you read under where it says visualization, that's all the steps that I actually laid out for Chicken Bone. Is her name. I actually laid out for Chicken Bone. And if you do it, you'll go back and it'll fix.
You say that the situation could have happened in your life, or it can be completely in your imagination. So it can be something that, like a phobia, like something that doesn't really,
you can get rid of phobias.
Kind of physical scenario.
Yes, they use this with post-traumatic stress disorders, you know, for the Army guy.
You give directions to do it 7 or 8 times for 7 or 8 days before you construct a timeline?
The reason I say do it 7 or 8 times is for you can have practice, okay? Because really you can get it done in just 1 5-minute session. You know, doing it by yourself, self-help, you can do it in 1 5-minute session. But the 7 or 8 times is for the practice.
Yeah, to get you to get it, to really
do it. Yeah, it's not like the swish to where you need to do it, you know, over and over and over. Because once you do it on the timeline once, that's it. You got it.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get it down once, you got it. The same with the swish, but the swish you have to do it 4, 5, 6, 7 times. Sort of take effect and hold good with the timeline therapy that Tad James brought up just 29 years ago. It's pretty neat that this just came up 29 years ago. I'm sure it's been around, you know. Anyway, with the timeline, you get it done the first session, the first time. When I say session, I'm talking about, you know, doing what it says to do right here in the book.
Yeah, you talk about your most powerful built-up state. I guess that's a state of consciousness. And if you've done it right, then you've done it. I see what you mean.
When I say your most powerful built-up state, you probably want to think about a time that you might have won a reward or everybody was clapping and you did something great that day, or maybe like when you climbed the mountain that time and you felt really good. You want to imagine that time, and then you'll feel the emotion from it, and then you'll start feeling a good state.
Yeah.
What did you call it?
They call those peak moments.
Yeah, that peak moment.
Only so many of those in any lifetime, you know, winning the big game, becoming a father, you know.
Yeah, yeah. One lady that I instructed on this. She imagined the time that she held her baby for the first time. That put her in her most incorrigible state. And then I got her to go back on the timeline, and when she, you know, took care of what the it was actually a phobia. When she took care of what the phobia was, she thought that everybody was out to hurt her. When she took care of that phobia back on her timeline and came back up, the pain that she was in left. So I know this sounds extraordinary, and it is. You just have to try it, you know?
Yeah, well, you're talking about doing some deep work here, too. It is extraordinary.
Well, it sounds like deep work, but if you actually try it, you'll see that it's really not that hard at all. But some of the most complex sounding things in the world are so simple, it amazes you. Just like TMS healing. We got to recondition the whole thing and all that, but once we get it down, we're like, man, all this time, and I was holding all that anger. But it just seems like so much more because we talk about, you know, the repressions, we talk about the fear, we talk about the anger, we talk about all the different things. And it kind of goes a lot broader with the TMS healing. But at the same time, you have all these different tunes in TMS healing. And like I said, when I used the timeline therapy, which is really real simple once you understand how it works, it took away something that had bothered me for 25 years.
Uh-huh.
It had me in fear. I was scared of women. I mean, I wasn't scared of them, but I wouldn't even date much. If I got a girlfriend, then I wanted to keep them. I was scared to even have a different girlfriend than the one I was with.
Eric, could I ask you a question? What did they say you were going to die of? You were 15, and what happened exactly?
You got to understand, this is like 20, 25, 26 years ago, you know? And
yeah.
it was when the HIV first came out, and I went to see a doctor, and I had strep throat. But what he did was he looked at me, and he said, "Have you ever had a relationship with a woman?" And I said, you know, I was 15. I had a girlfriend, you know, yeah. And he starts giving me all these pamphlets on AIDS. So, yeah, that scared me. I literally laid on the bed for about 3 months and shrunk down to skin and bones at that time.
Yeah, no, you have strep throat, really. So this illustrates why you should actually get tested by a real MD. Wasn't this guy who told you this kind of a village healer or something? He wasn't really a qualified medical doctor.
Yeah, he was just a guy at the health clinic that just looked at me and said, you know, here's some pamphlets, go read them. And really all he was doing was just trying to say, stay safe. But as a kid, I took it as he was saying, you got this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, you're naive. Yeah. You have a naive imagination at that age. You just, you take things literally. You take everything literally.
Yeah, because he didn't really say, you know, you got this or anything. He didn't do no test or anything.
Yeah,
but when he handed me those pamphlets, as a child, I took it that, oh, my God, I'm fixing to die now.
Uh-huh.
And you know the stigma that was around that back then.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I know I myself was very afraid of it back in the 80s.
I believe everybody was. You know, I believe people are still afraid of it. But, you know, the thing is, you know, we know a lot more about it now, and we're more conscious of it. We love our brothers and sisters, and there was just something in my mind from being that child, you know, and hurting and laying in that bed thinking I was about to die. And then when I did the timeline therapy, I went back and fixed it, you know, and it set all that free. It set something free that was always a trigger to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a misdiagnosis can really throw you a curveball.
Yeah.
Oh, that was in nocebo. That was in nocebo that almost took me out, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the last of the therapeutic techniques you talk about is relief from anxiety and panic attacks, since we're coming to the end of our time here. You say that acute anxiety can cause panic attacks that come on suddenly or develop over months or years. To alleviate such panic attack, you advise us to use relaxation and other techniques contained in this book. You also said you should look at Claire Weeks' book, Simple Effective Treatment of Agoraphobia. I, An agora is a field, I think, in Latin. It means, in other words, you're afraid of being out in open space. And there's, of course, her best-selling self-help for your nerves. Do you know, what does she say in there about ways to relieve anxiety and panic?
Well, the main thing she, you know, the main thing she talks about is the fear of fear. And as soon as I saw that in Claire Weeks' book, you know, I knew that was my anxiety issue, was the fear of, you know, having another anxiety attack. And as soon as I stopped doing that and started relaxing and meditating, soothing myself, then the anxiety went away. You have to do the soothing. That is so important. You have to do the forgiving. You have to do, you know, the main ingredients that we talk about in TMS and all the books, regardless if you do timeline therapy, regardless if you do a swish or not, make sure you do those general rules of forgiveness, of letting go, releasing. But soothing is a general word. Meditate, relax, calm yourself down. Quit getting upset because the pain might still be there. Know that you're going to be okay, you know? That's the most important part. Because we can create anxiety. Every day we get up, the pain's there. Oh, my God, there's anxiety again. It should have already lessened by now, you know? So
we all know people who are anxious-type personalities, and you could hear it in their voice. I think when Alan Gordon was talking to one of the patients in his recovery program on those recordings that are embedded in there, you can hear it in the guy's voice. It's quaking. He's always anxious. He's always worried.
And remember how he felt how he got him to feel the feelings? How he got him to feel the emotions?
Yeah.
He actually talked it out. He actually talked it out, but he was making, or he was telling them to feel the emotions. And how when he was,
he's a real skilled practitioner of that therapeutic technique.
Yes, feel the feelings. That's awesome when it comes to relieving the anxiety too. That's not in the book here. It might be in there somewhere because I put so much in there. But yes, feel the feelings. That is a powerful tool. That is one of the most powerful tools I know of.
How would feeling if you're anxious? Aren't you feeling anxious? You know what I'm saying? If you say
feel,
you're not
running from it. See, when we're anxious, when we have anxiety, we don't want to have it. We want to run from it. We don't want to face this anxiety. We don't want to face this feeling. It's just like the pain.
Yeah.
We don't want to face it, you know? But if you sit there and you feel it and you face it and you show it and you don't fear it, then it'll start to dissipate.
Okay.
Claire Weeks, 101. Yeah. Claire Weeks' book, Don't Fear the Fear.
This looks like the Starship TMS over here. This is like, was it John Luke's cigar or whatever? Hard, yeah.
Sorry, just ignore us. Had a little.
I like it. It really makes us look bigger than we are.
Plumbing emergency in my household, and Becca helped me out with it. As you were. My toilet has been flushing for half an hour, and the apartment complex that I live in, it pumps some serious water, and there was leaks everywhere. So Becca actually is here at my place, and she's muted right now because we're in the same room. And she took over my seat in case she needed to do something as the moderator, I just asked if I could come back because my landlord's on the way, but we had to swap seats briefly, so that's our Starship Enterprise moment.
Yeah, I just thought it was special effects, you know, and that was great for me. That was awesome.
Seems like we have a real committee operating here. It's like a Command Central.
Indeed. That's where we are. We're at, it's the central office. But it sounded like there was a real discussion going on here, and I don't want to hijack that. That's my role here.
Well, it seems like we've reached the end of Eric's chapter here with the anxiety and panic attacks and Claire Weeks. Should we throw this discussion open to questions at this point for us?
I think that sounds like a wonderful idea.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot to each other here, but
You're so right. You're so right. Let's do that.
Rob, before you do that, I just want to sum up something right quick.
Yeah.
Make sure you visualize yourself healed. I mean, that is a part. I think we all agree that is one of the parts that's a powerful concept. You know, and say affirmations. The affirmations is so you can be good to yourself. So you can let yourself. You can lighten up on yourself, you know, because so many of us beat up on ourselves so much. We have to love ourselves more, you know, and act as if you're already healed. And what I mean by that, just, you know, so many of us are like for myself, all I can do is tell you what I know about me, and then you, hopefully you'll recollect it with the things that you go through. And what I did was I acted as if my back wasn't as bad as it was, and I started throwing horseshoes, and I started moving, and I visualized it, and I was acting as if in my mind in the visualizations, and then slowly but surely everything I was seeing in the visualizations, it was coming true, because I was also putting my hand to the plow, you know, I was getting up and doing it, and learn not to fear. Everybody in TMS Wiki and the TMS world and TMS Healing should read Claire Weeks' book. You know, one of her books. Just get one of them because they're all great. And, you know, don't fear that first wave of fear is one of her most important concepts. That's the fear of anxiety. Oh, God, this is going to happen. I know it's going to happen. That's the fear that sets it all into motion, that makes the other stronger wave of fear come on you. But anyway, and learn to feel your emotions. You know, if they're bad emotions, so many of us don't want to feel those emotions. Learn to sit there and feel those emotions. That I believe that's Alan Gordon's ISTDP. Do that. Learn to feel those emotions. Okay, that's it.
And some powerful ideas. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
That. Yeah. Is what he's saying? It sounds like you can see how it applies to you. Oh, Paul, am I right on that? I think perhaps we all can, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have a real... I always was an anxious, prone type. but I never... It took over with this TMS. You know, the anxiety, I think I mentioned before this began. After I got some misdiagnoses and the pain got worse...
And anxiety is one of the key TMS personality characteristics. It is something that you see so often in TMSers, and it's something, the great thing is that it's something that you can control. It's something that you can master if you work at it. And Claire Weeks' stuff is great for that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'll get
TMS thrives, feeds on anxiety.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, see, I never in a million years would have thought that I would learn, you know, there was two fears when it came to anxiety, and I learned that from Claire Weeks' book, and that was one of the most powerful concepts I learned in the TMS healing, okay? So just remember that for your anxiety. Just you have, like I said earlier, we have the audios that's free that you can listen to at tmswiki.org. It's Claire Weeks. It's called Claire Weeks Audios.
Okay.
Just type it into the search engine, and you should find them pretty quickly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're saying just don't fear the anxiety, just feel the anxiety. Was that one of the main things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you just sit there and feel it. Yeah, and don't, like, if your heart's supposed to race, don't fear it. You know, just let it race, right? Feel it, you know? If your hands start to shake, don't fear it. Just let them shake. You know, your knees start to shake, don't fear it. Let them shake. And soon, you know, you'll be desensitizing yourself to all these years that you feared when your hands started shaking, that you feared when your heart started, you know, pumping hard, that you feared when you felt the anxiety coming on.
Yeah, and it's not like, I mean, us TMSers, often we want to do something really, really well, so we're going to work really hard at feeling, you know, our heart pumping.
Exactly.
Like, well, you don't have to do that. You just kind of let it happen.
Yeah, yeah, just wait till it happens, you know. I mean, it's not like, I mean, the people with anxiety, I think I was born with it. I think I had it ever since I can remember. And I think some people are just born anxious. I don't know. But at the same time, you can beat it. You can learn to overcome it. And so, like me, I thought I was going to have it my whole life, and that wasn't the truth.
Mm-hmm.
When you learn the truth, it will set you free. And Claire will help you there.
Okay.
But I'm helping you when I say, or we're all helping you when we say, relax, love yourself, you know, do the affirmations, you know, pick up a Louise Hayes book. I've been mentioning her. Pick up a Louise Hayes book, you know, and learn to say those affirmations. Even do tapping. You know, the whole reason that I do tapping is so that I can love myself. It's not that I'm trying to relieve the pain. It's that I'm loving myself. I'm telling myself that I love me, you know? Not being sarcastic, but just because I've always beat up on myself over the years, you know? If I didn't go anywhere, yeah, that was too rough on myself. That inner bully was beating me up, and, you know, I had to soothe myself in order to get that to stop. I had other methods, but the soothing.
I find that the anxiety and self-consciousness are reciprocal. They feed on each other.
Yes. Yes.
Like, I used to be self-conscious about walking down the stairs at the gym because people would see me limping. And that made me more anxious and more afraid. And therefore, I did limp. And now it's gone. So I tear, like this afternoon, I just roared down the stairs because I didn't have that self-consciousness about people noticing me limping. It's gone. It seems like the two go together. The self-consciousness, which is perhaps based on low self-esteem, too, behind the whole thing. And the anxiety feeds on it. It becomes like a complex. Low self-esteem, self-consciousness, anxiety. Oh, people notice how I'm walking like a crab. Oh, I'll walk more like a crab. You know, it's a vicious cycle, I think, is the...
Right.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, that's awesome.
I guess TMS becomes like a vicious cycle. That's how I got in. I felt like I got into it deeper and deeper. Of course, these doctors and stuff were not helping.
Yeah, you know, Paula, and the more we say, oh, God, what about this? And, oh, God, what about that? And, oh, man, what is this? And, oh, Lord, what is that? What's happening to me? The more we stay in that right there, the more the TMS is going to stay. The more you fear something or have anxiety of something, the more you overanalyze something, the more you worry about what other people think, the more TMS and so forth. And it keeps going in circles. And like Bruce said, it keeps feeding itself.
Well, let me tell you, while we've been talking, or I've been listening to you all, I kept having the thought, what if I never get over this? You know, what if I have to live with this the rest of my life?
Oh, yeah.
I don't...
That's... They're bullying.
You'd say that's the
bully
then? That's
what it is. Yeah. Is that, or sometimes he calls it the inner terrorist. It's trying to scare you. It's trying to, and you deserve better than that. Like, you don't deserve to have to live with that fear. So one of them is to be angry at that part. Yeah.
But if you don't believe it, you ain't got to listen to it.
Okay, well, you've hit on something that's kind of interesting. That's part of my own mind.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, so how should I be angry at part of myself that has seemingly turned on myself? But yet, according to Doc, is that the unconscious that's trying to trick us? But supposedly, according to Dr. Sarno, that's trying to divert our attention from these painful emotions. So in a way, it's trying to help.
Correct.
There's 150 billion neurons in your brain. I think it's fair and reasonable to assume, 80 billion. Still a lot. So it's fair and reasonable to assume that different parts of the unconscious portion of your brain are going to be doing different things. And part is trying to protect you, and another part is trying to scare you. And so one thing that Alan Gordon does, been thinking a lot about Alan Gordon recently because we're going to start a new series of threads about the program that he donated to our nonprofit. But he suggests the anger doesn't necessarily go at you. The anger can also go more like a timeline therapy approach where you look back in your history and say, how did I get to be? Where did I learn to be so afraid? And so I do the same thing. I've got a huge inner terrorist, and I know exactly where I learned to be afraid. It took me a long time. For me, it's because my mother died. So my mother died when I was 9, and I knew she was going to do it. She had terminal diabetes, and she was a physician, and so she told me that she had terminal diabetes. And so I grew up when I was 6 or 7 and 8 and 9 knowing that my mother was going to die. And what's amazing to me is that it took me until my late 30s to figure out, you know, that this is what was going on in my head, that I have the inner terrorist. And I think that's one of the reasons why I'm such a fan of Alan, is because it was through that work that I realized this. I think one thing that you can do is you can go back and you can say, okay, where did this come from in my life? You can kind of create that emotional energy. You can get angry. You can visualize that little child that you used to be, and you can get angry that she, or in my case, he, had to deal with that. And you can use that anger to power your own love for yourself and appreciation for yourself, that you deserve better than that. That you don't deserve on a day-to-day basis. You care enough about yourself that you won't stand for the part of you which wants to say, you know, that you're never going to get better. I mean, can we tell the future? I think Walt was saying earlier, no, we can't tell the future. So you don't know what's going to happen. You know, you might not be alive tomorrow. Do you have to live with that? Do you deserve to have a part of your brain which is constantly saying, you might die tomorrow, you might die tomorrow, you might never get better? And no, you deserve better than that. And so it all comes in some sense down to self-compassion and saying, no, I deserve better than this.
I know we didn't talk about the affirmations that Eric emphasized as being central. And two of them are, I forgive and let go. And the second was, I'm calm, relaxed, patient, and confident. And you have to say that every hour of every day to yourself.
Actually, I would go all day long saying them in my mind, just in my thoughts over and over and over. And I would actually feel, when I say I'm calm, I would feel the emotional calmness hit my body. And when I say I'm relaxed, I would feel the emotion of relaxation in my body. And it took me about a month just to start feeling those emotions. But each time I would say it, I would imagine that I would feel it. And then within a month, I would actually start feeling, you know, the calmness, the relaxation. And I'm calm, relaxed, patient, confident. The patience and the confidence, I would start feeling them like that. And as I was walking and as I was going to go do something or anything I was going to do, that was soothing me. That was also soothing, like Forrest was saying, you know, that inner bully, that inner critic, you know. It was also getting that part to be quiet, you know, to just shut up and get out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
You got it.
I didn't realize how important these two affirmations were until I see how I forgive and let go applies to Walt's chapter and the drubbing he took from the Abraham Lincoln scholars, And then the second one, I'm calm, relaxed, patient, and confident, and how much that applies to all of our situations, but in particular to Eric's. If there's anything that comes from these two chapters, it's like those two, they illustrate these two affirmations. Those are central, they're the pillars, you know, the two pillars here.
Because we have to forgive ourselves, you know, and I say it right there in the book, how we have, we're so hard on ourselves, you know, and like she said, she hears this, she heard their voice or whatever, and it was casting doubt to her, and actually that's us doing it, and we think it's, you know, we don't know where it's coming from, and we know it's us, and we don't know how to stop it. But when you start giving yourself that self-compassion, you'll start to see that it'll start lightening up, you know, that part, the inner bully will start lightening up. And at the same time, the way, you know, Forrest said it differently, like the way Alan Gordon lays it out there, and I think I got it, you know, combined in there like that in a way. It's powerful, the soothing part, and the part where you go back and you look at it, and like what Forrest said, you go back and you look at where it originated, you know, and then you just get fed up with how it started, and then you soothe it with love.
So compassion and forgiveness of the self is the way to heal the divided mind.
Uh-huh. Well, one thing
Bruce. Yeah.
I blame myself so much for listening to these doctors and therapists.
You have to forgive them, too. You've got to forgive them. You've got to forgive them and let it go.
Okay. Okay, but that brings me up. I think, how about denying anger? That's what we're good at. I know I'm good at it. So don't we have to allow ourselves to...
Yeah, you can feel the emotion of anger, but you don't want to go around just being angry, because if you're being angry, then you're allowing the anger to feed the TMS. But if you just feel the emotion of anger and you don't go around and, you know, want to beat everybody up and all that, then what you're doing, if you're feeling it, then you're allowing it to dissipate and release. But if you go around angry all the time, then what you're doing is you're just feeding the TMS. Does that make a difference? Do you get, see what I'm saying?
You're saying feel it, but then let it go, forgive. Or is that what you mean, like feel it first and then let the anger go and forgive? Yeah.
Yes, because if you sit there and you feel it instead of just staying angry all the time, and you sit there and you feel the emotion, eventually that emotion will start getting lighter and lighter and lighter, because the more angry you get at anger, it's just going to feed more anger, right? But if you sit there and you, without fear, without anger, just feel the emotion of anger, does that make sense? Don't even get angry at anger. Don't even get angry at the emotion of anger. Just feel it. And when you feel it, eventually it'll dissipate, lighten up, and leave.
I see what you mean. You mean feeling your emotions, and that helps them dissipate.
All those years I spent in PT wasting my time, I guess I didn't waste my time, because the one common theme I noticed in everyone who walked in there with lower back pain or knee pain or foot pain was anger. They were all mad about something. One guy had found his mother dead at work, and he had an alcoholic father who abused him. And then one lady's father had just died, and she got divorced and lost all her money, and she was mad as heck and not going to take it anymore. And how did it express itself? Real bad lower back pain leading to a double fusion surgery. It goes on and on like that. I could see what Dr. Sarno says about anger, because it is a common theme in people who have TMS. It's an underlying common theme, although not always expressed. If you dig and dig and look at them, you'll say, oh, there it is. They got a reason to be unhappy.
I always knew that I was just denying it, letting people take advantage of me, you know, that kind of thing.
Yep.
But I didn't realize it could come out in my body like this. You know what I'm saying? I should have known. Well, see, that's a tyranny of the should. But I don't know why I didn't realize that you'd pay a price for that.
No, it's awesome. Never... You just caught the should. That was good.
That's very good. Yeah. That's really that you really have a great insight there.
Yeah.
Well, I do that a lot to myself. You know, I should have known such and such.
I do too. But, my friends often say, Becca, stop shoving on yourself. It sounds really rough. Prince is laughing. It sounds really silly, but I listen to so many judgments about everything. You know, it's like, angry. I'm mad at myself that I'm angry. There's so many judgments. I totally empathize with. I am totally the same way. I judge everything. There has to be a point where that it can't dictate your life. And I'm getting to I'm getting it from you can't dictate your life. You can't have constantly evaluating everything. It's not a way to live. It's not living. Really not easy just to stop, you know, and you stop judging yourself all of a sudden. You can't just stop having those thoughts, but there are ways to become more aware of them, like you just were. You caught yourself and kind of gained mindfulness around how you're treating yourself. From there, I honestly think.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah. Yeah. We're all still here. That was, I think there was just a moment of silence as we were appreciating what she was saying.
Yeah. Was she getting at the part where, like, Jim Rohn's famous saying? Jim Rohn's a motivational speaker. He passed away a few years ago. But anyway, it was like he had a saying, and it's called stop shooting on yourself. Stop shooting on yourself. So if anything sticks in your mind, there you go. You know, stop shooting on yourself. I couldn't hear you, Becca. I apologize. But
it
I'm
seems
sure
like
it's great. Anything Becca says, you need to listen to because it's great.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. It seems like there's a real important step in the TMS recovery process where you come to the realization that it's something you're doing to yourself. Because before that, all of these therapists and all of these PTs and all of these doctors are feeding you with information that it's really something out there or something physical.
And right.
They're telling you everything but what you really need to know.
Right. Misinformation they're giving you.
Yeah, but it's really hard to tell yourself that this is something I'm doing to myself. That seems like what's really necessary before
right.
you can begin to heal.
And because it gives you power, it says, well, if this is something that I'm doing to myself, this is something that I can stop. You know,
yeah,
this is something that I can grow
right.
on.
Yeah.
Theme
right.
for the night.
On one hand, that's like, oh, it's unbelievable, but on the other hand, it's empowering.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds a wonderful theme to end on. What were you saying, Paula? And then maybe we can wrap up soon?
Oh, I don't remember. I don't remember. Just agreeing. Just about being so hard on myself, not realizing it could result in this. You know, although I told you all, I don't know if you remember, I'd had a similar experience 5 years ago, but it wasn't as bad, and the doctor that time, the second doctor I went to, caught it. He told me there was nothing wrong with me, mm-hmm. and I believed him, and it went away. This time I wasn't so lucky.
Yeah.
So, and that's how I just got in so deep, and then, I mean, the pain just getting worse and worse, the symptoms spreading. You know what I mean? So,
absolutely.
If I could
have, there are many people who view TMS as a warning signal. It's like last barking because the barn is burning down. And you know, it didn't get your attention beforehand, and you didn't see that there was something that needed to change, but now you have that opportunity again.
Yes, and I'm trying to look on it that way. I do feel trapped in life, which I won't, my age, I'm married, I can't really move. I wanted to move when my husband and I got married because the job opportunities here were so poor, and my education was not, I have a graduate degrees in German and English. This did not put, so I needed to move, and my husband wouldn't move. Okay.
The more you love yourself, the more you give yourself that self-compassion, the more you'll see that you'll break those chains that feels like they're holding you back right now, okay?
Okay.
That's what I was talking about earlier when I said Walt wrote 6 books in 6 months. And when I was talking about all the things that I've already done in such a short period of time, you'll break away from all that. The more you give yourself self-compassion, the more you'll give yourself freedom to do what it is that you want to do to be happy in life.
Okay. I'm beginning to believe that. I mean, you told me that the first time you told, and then I guess, it was just 2 weeks ago, but then reading The Great Pain Deception. He emphasizes that, Steve, of healing your life, finding a purpose. I realized that I didn't have a purpose. And I was trying to do something when this happened that I'm not sure I really wanted to do. I was doing it, I didn't think I had any other options. I was doing it to try to not impress other people, but to be acceptable. You know, I told you I was getting this master's in information and library science, a third master's degree. And
that
I
was
had,
the will that got away, right? Was it the, or
no.
You still got the credits? You still got the credits? Did you get it?
I had, well, see, I'm not sure I really wanted to get that. I had started the same program twice, like 15 years ago and then like 10 years ago, and I stopped it both times because I didn't really want to
do
it.
Now? Do you know now what you want to do?
I'm not sure what I want to do. I was putting tremendous pressure on myself when this started.
Yeah.
I worked 4 months straight. I took like 2 days off in 4 months. And I was only taking I was trying to do my classes perfectly.
Yeah,
and I mean, I'm a terrible perfectionist.
Trying to be perfect, Love yourself.
Oh my gosh.
Love yourself.
And
forgive yourself. Make sure you forgive yourself for not being perfect, okay? Forgive yourself for not being perfect, okay? Because guess what, Paula? Ain't none of us perfect, huh? Okay? Right?
Yep. Right. I know. I always thought I had.
You gotta let it go.
Paula, what were you going to say? You were about to say something. What were you going to say?
Me or?
Yes.
Well, I just realized how, I don't know why I thought I had to be perfect when everybody else in this program was far from, I mean, they would put in a few hours work. You know, I would put in, I don't know, probably 10 times the effort that other people would. And I don't know why I thought it was, now granted, I was 52, 3 years old trying to learn all this computer stuff that these other people learned in kindergarten. But I'm not sure if I wanted to do it or not is what I'm thinking. But yet if I don't do that, I don't quite know what to do. I think I was trying to, it was one of those things, I was carrying out other people's agendas. I kind of liked it, but at the same time I felt it was an impossible battle. You were talking about the laws of attraction, but at the same, and kind of what you think, if you expect positive results, that's what you'll get. If you expect negative results, I thought I was going to fail and that I wouldn't get a job in the end, no matter how hard I tried. I don't know if that was true or not. But when you're competing, when you're in your 50s, competing with people who are 25 years old, I don't know what I don't know if it would work out if I thought it would. Anyway, I don't even know if I wanted to do it or not, or if I still want to do it. But it's interesting that my right arm, see, that made it where I couldn't do it. Or I thought I, you see what I'm saying? My computer arm. my arm that I move the mouse with.
Yeah,
I thought it was
things like that. That's where TMS
right.
usually look. Like if you're a runner, what does it do? Go after your legs. If you're a computer
right.
programmer like Forrest,
Forrest,
it goes into your
right.
hands, you get RSI. And you,
well, in fact, you know, a girl told me in one of my classes, I say a girl, she was 25, but that age, that was the age of my classmates, but she was the first one who said, oh, that's repetitive strain injury. I hope it's not permanent. And I recognized, you know, that just started the fear. I didn't know what was wrong with my shoulder. And it was just, it didn't even bother me for a long time. But that was, and that's how I found you all, was finally I decided 3 months ago or something, oh, it must be repetitive strain injury. And then I found Forrest's video where he told his story. And that's what, anyway, that's when I first got onto TMS. And you see what I'm saying? That's, I don't, but we know that repetitive strain injury is a myth, right? It's TMS.
Yeah, but, I know a guy who earns his living as a carpenter, and so it starts in his arms until he can't do anything and can't go to work.
So did he not want to be a carpenter anymore? I mean,
he was probably under a great deal of strain to earn a living.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And it spread and spread, and the doctors give him all these neurochemical tests, and they can't find anything. And he's
mm-hmm.
also a perfectionist overachiever, you know, and
mm-hmm.
now he's getting about 50, and he used to be a world-class athlete. Yeah, you can
mm-hmm.
tell the pressures are coming on, are beginning to get to him. It's like I
right.
know a doctor whose feet started to tingle, and this led to a back problems when he turned 40 and when he got his first divorce and lost his house. It's like these things, there's always a bunch of evidence behind them. There's always a bunch of psychological business going on. It never
mm-hmm.
just happens in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's some
well,
kind
I was
of psychological
yeah.
consistency in it. Some kind of a storyline, a psychological storyline you can impose over the symptoms, and then you say, "Aha! Well, that's why it's happening now."
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this has attacked my arm where it turned into a quote-unquote frozen shoulder. In other words, I don't have full range of motion, and it. I don't know if it's that because I don't want to go back and do it because I thought it was going to, I was going to fail at it. I don't know if it was trying to keep me from fail. I kind of enjoyed it, but at the same time, it was pretty darn hard and I kept putting pressure on myself to do more and more. Like the next thing I was going to take was metadata, which I'm not even, and then XML, Forrest, you're probably familiar with that. I was putting pressure on myself to learn this real technical stuff, which I don't really have much interest in, but I wanted to be marketable. I'm still not sure how marketable I would have been with a master's in library science, even with those information science courses. See, there was a whole other group of people getting master's in information science. Those are the people getting the jobs. Library stuff is going down the tubes. I should have done this. Well, there's the should, you know. It's too late. Anyway, I was doing
it
what
ain't
I did
never
with
too
the
late, huh?
Well, I mean, it was. I was doing what I did with my first two master's degrees. I think that's one way of my escapes was through intellectual or academic endeavor and achievement. Unfortunately, it did not result too much in employment outside of academia. That's the kind of the. I was repeating the same cycle I'd done. Two times before. I was trying to be more practical, but it was kind of a losing battle. Anyway, I'm still sorting it out what I want to do. You know what I wanted to do? One thing I thought about doing was cooking school. I love cooking as a hobby, and that's a practical thing. And but it's something I like. So I'm now giving, I wouldn't give myself permission to even look into that because it's not what other people expected of me. They expect me to be this academic type. I'm now getting my, if I can recover, I shouldn't say if, when, to maybe pursue that. Get a culinary associate's degree. I mean, that's something maybe even in this town I could, you know, do catering or, I don't know, some kind of small business. Anyway, I don't know if that's a fantasy, but it's something I dreamed about when I was in my 20s.
Awesome. There you go.
Yeah, I just never pursued it other than as a hobby.
Live your dreams.
Yeah, I mean, Steve, I'm good. Happiness first, helpful first of all, something along those lines. It sounds like you have awareness now to understand what could make you happy, what was that path, and what could eventually, what doesn't. I think that kind of awareness will serve well going forward. Awareness serves everyone. Really well personally. But I think I want to be mindful of the time. It's about 10:55 p.m. here.
Mm.
It's kind of late. But I wanted to say this has been really awesome. It's been a while since I've been on the call, in the call and discussion group. But I really appreciate you guys all opening up and sharing. It's been really powerful, I think. It's quite powerful. But next week, are we on to the same two chapters? Or not the same, I mean the next two chapters, which is Eric's Journey 7, I Get Clobbered Again, What Causes TMS? We can certainly address a lot of those things we just talked about, along with fear, the inner child, and summary of TMS healing techniques. Eric's Journey 7, tapping, flipping, imprinting, and meditation. Our show for tonight.
Thank you.
Final closing thoughts before we say.
That's it. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, I've really benefited from this tonight, you all. I really appreciate it.
You're awesome, Paula. Thank you.
Oh,
all right.
You all are awesome.
Thanks for joining us.
Okay, well, I'll talk to you all next week then.
Good night.
Okay, bye-bye.
Good night.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Bruce. Thanks, Becca.
Okay.
Thanks, Lord.
Thanks, Harvey.
Yeah. Mom.
Okay, so it sounds like
everyone
it's that time.
Indeed.